Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans, and welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. Patricia Traina here with you on Thursday, February 25th. It is another edition of Throwback Thursday, and I'm so glad everyone has been enjoying Throwback Thursday. I've gotten some wonderful letters of you guys and gals sharing your memories, your disappointments in the case of the walk down memory lane, the not so fun walk down memory lanes. And I've really enjoyed reading them. I've tried to, at the very least, put them on Giants Country so that they could be shared with everybody else and also give me an opportunity to respond to them so that you know that I'm A, reading them, and B, enjoying them. So that's going to be today's show topic. We're going to do another Throwback Thursday. And in this one, I thought, well, since the draft is coming up and, you know, the draft is going to be at the end of April, beginning of May, how about we do something along the lines of the most underrated draft picks. And I'm going to try and keep this list fairly recent. I try to keep all this stuff, you know, from 2000 onward, but a few guys actually kind of made the list going back to the 1990s. So they will be on the list. And this list is not presented in any specific order. I probably should have ranked it, but you know what? All these guys were so underrated, and yet they came in and they had such an impact on the Giants organization, on the various seasons, that I just felt it very difficult to rate them. Maybe I'll do that for an article. I don't know, but I did pick out a handful of guys, and basically they span different eras. So what I'm going to try and do here is I'm going to try to do them in order of era, and I'm going to kick it off with 1995, round six, some guy by the name of Charles Way. Now, Charles Way, for those who don't, you know, the modern day fans, you might remember the name Charles Way because he once worked for the Giants front office. I think he was director of player engagement, I think. And then he left the Giants and took up a post with the NFL league office before switching careers altogether and just getting out of football. But Charles Way was probably, I would say, you know, in terms of fullbacks, and the Giants have had some good fullbacks over the years, if you were ranking fullbacks, guys who were very much a part of, you know, that running game, that made that running game hum, Charles Way would have to be right up there. I would put him maybe second behind Maurice Carthon, who was the fullback on the 1986 team. So Charles Way, I would give a second place. Just a tremendous player, a tremendous individual. He was kind of the unsung hero for the Giants running games back in the 1990s. And if I remember correctly, he had a career ending. It actually turned out to be a career ending, I want to say, knee injury. I think that's what he had. And he wasn't able to play anymore. And it was just sad. I remember when he couldn't play anymore, I remember thinking to myself, wow, the Giants really lost themselves a good one here in Charles Way. And, you know, I was glad to see him still stick around and be kind of a role model that he was. He was always a quiet guy in the locker room, but he was very well respected and just had that impact on and off the field. So very, very underrated draft pick taken in the sixth round of 1995. All right, let's go to 1997. This player was selected in the fifth round of that year's draft, and he was a defensive back, a safety specifically, and one of my favorites to this day. And I have a lot of favorites, but this guy in particular is somebody who I always thought very highly of. And that's Sam Garns, who is a Bronx kid. He played his college ball at the University of Cincinnati. And, you know, Sam Garns never made a Pro Bowl. He wasn't an all-pro, but my goodness, when he hit a guy, you could feel the vibration, if you will, all the way up to the press box. He was just a really good enforcer on the Giant defenses of the 90s. And it was great to see, you know, it's always nice to see these players as they evolve from rookies when they're kind of, you know, young boys still, and they don't know their way around the world. And then they grow up, they become men, they become husbands and fathers and whatnot. Sam actually went on to become an assistant coach. He worked primarily with John Fox, who was his defensive coordinator back in the day. I think the two of them worked together, I want to say, in Chicago and also with Denver. And as a matter of fact, I remember running into Sam Garns when the Super Bowl was played here in the New York, New Jersey area. And much to my delight, Sam Garns did remember who I was. As a matter of fact, he came running over to me to give me a big old bear hug and still, you know, still looked like he could strap it up. But he was a strong safety, if I remember correctly, and really, you know, one of the most underrated players, I think, on the Giants for his short time that he was with the team. And just a really, really terrific guy. One more I'll give you from the 90s, and then we'll take a break and move forward into the 2000s. This is a guy, you're going to recognize this name, because he was just hired as a head coach of the Detroit Lions. He was a third-round draft pick in 1999, tight end Dan Campbell. Now, Dan Campbell was an interesting guy. He was another one of my favorites. And again, I have so many of them. My gosh, I could tell y'all some great stories about some of the, you know, little chit-chats we would have here and there in between football stuff. Anyway, Dan Campbell, I always thought he was an underappreciated guy. I mean, the guy could block like nobody's business. And he came in around the tail end, I think, of Howard Cross's career. So he learned his craft. I mean, he was already a pretty good blocker in the run game and whatnot, but he really learned to take it up a notch thanks to Howard Cross, who was probably one of, if not the best blocking tight end this team has seen. Maybe outside of Jeremy Shockey, you can make that case, but Howard was really the gold standard, and Dan learned from Howard. And, you know, it's funny because you just kind of knew talking with Dan back in the day that he was going to go on and be a coach, that he just had that in him. The guy was all about football all the time, and my goodness, he could talk your ear off. You know, he was quiet with most people, but he would talk my ear off. We would talk about football. We would talk about other stuff, you know, barbecue, which was a big thing from him, you know, with him being in the state of Texas, and rodeos and all that stuff, cattle farming, all the stuff that he used to do back in the day. And real fun story for you. I don't normally do this as a matter of fact. I don't normally write people in the NFL letters, because A, I have media access. I can always, you know, pick up the phone and, you know, see if I can get somebody. But when Dan Campbell was named the head coach of the Detroit Lions, I don't know, I felt a sense of pride, because I remember talking with him about how he hoped to one day become a coach, an NFL coach. I don't think he said head coach at the time, but he spoke about wanting to become a coach. So I remembered that conversation. And I, you know, after watching his opening or his introductory press conference with the Lions, I wrote him a quick note. I said, hey, I don't know if you remember me or not, but, you know, I mentioned a few things, and I mentioned that conversation, and I sent the letter off, and I figured, okay, you know what? I'm not going to hear back. The guy's got a million things to do, and, you know, I won't hear back. Well, I did hear back. I got a short, sweet note, basically saying, I remember you very well, and he emphasized very well, because, you know, we used to talk a lot, thanking me for the good wishes and, you know, pretty much saying, hey, you know, you were spot on when you said I would become a coach, you know, words to that effect. So just a real cool, you know, FYI. That, again, I don't usually send letters out to guys congratulating them for becoming coaches, but because I saw Dan was one of those guys that I saw come in from the time he was literally wet behind the ears as a young man, and then just see him grow through the years. It was nice to see, you know, once a Giant, always a Giant. That's what the late Wellington Mara used to say. And, you know, so that's why I sent that letter. So you are listening to Locked On Giants. It's a Throwback Thursday. We are doing most underrated draft picks. Coming up in the next two segments, we're going to turn to the 2000s, so stay with us.
With the ever-increasing number of auto makes and models, it's now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait for the counterperson to order the parts on a computer, usually choosing the brands that the store happens to prefer? Instead, take your search for your auto parts to rockauto.com. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for all your auto parts and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpeting. Whether it's for your classic or daily drive, get everything you need in just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices that you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so that they know we sent you. RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need. That's rockauto.com.
Hey, Giant fans. This is Patricia Traina, host of the Locked On Giants podcast. If you're looking for a way to keep Giants football in the forefront during this offseason, pick up a copy of my new book, The Big 50 New York Giants, The Men and Moments That Made the New York Giants. This 350-plus page book takes a deep dive into the rich history of the Giants franchise, covering every era with stories, photos, and more that take you behind the headlines. The Big 50 New York Giants is available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, TriumphBooks.com, and wherever books are sold. Pick up your copy today, and thank you to everyone for your support. Welcome back, Giant fans, to segment two of Locked On Giants. It is a throwback Thursday, and I am Patricia Traina, taking you back as we look at some of my favorite and guys that I consider to be underrated Giants draft picks. So I hope you're enjoying the show so far. And February is Black History Month, and the Locked On Podcast Network is honoring the challenges and successes of Black men and women in sports with a new series called Locked On Presents More Than the Game. This week we have two conversations for you to wrap up the month. First, a discussion on protests in sports across the leagues. Then tune in for a discussion on the importance of Black history in sports, what's been achieved, and the important work left to be done, all in discussion on the Locked On Presents podcast feed. Subscribe to the radio.com app wherever you get your podcasts. All right, so in this segment and the next segment of the podcast here on the Locked On Giants podcast, we're going to turn to the 2000s, most underrated draft picks. And I'm also trying to share like little memories and stuff, behind the scenes stuff, just to kind of give the show a little bit more of a personalization, because I know a lot of you guys can go and you know, either look these guys up to see what they've done or you know, maybe you already know what they've done and you don't need me to tell you all that again. So really, you know, enjoying this particular show. And let's go into the year, let's see, 2003. I have two guys here in 2003 that I thought were kind of underrated draft picks. One guy you're going to recognize the name, the other guy maybe not so much, but there's a neat little piece of history behind it. The first guy, let's get the more well-known guy out of the way. Round 6 of 2003, David Tyree. Now, everybody knows David Tyree for the helmet catch, you know, a Super Bowl hero. But maybe, you know, something that I don't know if a lot of people know about David Tyree is when he came out of Syracuse, he was a very troubled young man. He was a guy who really wasn't on the path, the right path of life. You know, he was, by his own admission, mind you, he had done some things that maybe, you know, if he had a choice to do them again today, or a choice to do, you know, a do-over, he would have told his younger self, stay the hell away from that stuff. So he had some issues. And, you know, 1 year, I think he had delivered some kind of speech at Montclair. I can't remember if it was Montclair University or Montclair High School, but he ended up getting arrested for allegedly possessing, you know, he was in a car and allegedly they had pot, which at the time was illegal in New Jersey. Now it's legal, believe it or not. It was just legalized not too long ago by the governor of New Jersey after a vote. So I remember, you know, Tyree at first was kind of a standoffish guy, kind of a wiseacre, a guy who, you know, you kind of approached at your own risk. And I just remember after he went through that arrest, he had hit rock bottom and he turned his life around. He became a man of God. He became a devoted husband, a devoted father. He took his craft more seriously and he lost the ego and he lost the attitude that was just holding him back. And one of the favorite stories that I've ever written, and I wish I still had the article because I remember how I even worded it, and I tried to replicate that wording when I wrote the Big 50, the men and moments that made the New York Giants, and I think I did to an extent, but not quite how I did that initial article. But he just talked about the rebirth that he went through and how he knew he was meant for bigger and better things. And, you know, of course, along came the Super Bowl. But, you know, even that path had some bumps to it. You know, he was a guy who that season he had lost his mother to a heart attack. The days leading up to the Super Bowl, he couldn't catch a cold, let alone a ball. You know, especially when it looked like he would have to play and Plaxico Burress might not be able to play. So to see how everything kind of came to a head and worked out well for him, just amazing. And, you know, David, you know, some people I know have different opinions about David, who is, he's not perfect. None of us are. But the one thing I could say about him is when he worked for the Giants, he was a role model. He was a guy who was like a big brother to a lot of these other guys. And he helped more people than I think people realize in that organization, in that locker room. And, you know, unfortunately for David, when Joe Judge came in, they decided to go in a different direction. They brought in, I think it's Dr. Laney Lawrence, an actual, you know, a PhD who, you know, has a little bit better credentials, I guess, in academia and sports psychology and all that good stuff. So David then went on to open a juice bar in Morristown. But still, never ceases to amaze me. I mean, the guy is just humble. He's, you know, you couldn't ask for I think a more loyal person to call a friend. And I'm very, very lucky in that regard because David Tyree always, you know, once he turned his life around, he became very, you know, protective might not be the right word, but he always kind of looked out for those who he knew respected him and appreciated him. And I was one of them. And he always made sure I had what I needed. And if there was a player I was looking for and that player was off hiding someplace, a lot of times David would go and he would fish the guy out and say, hey, it's okay. Go talk to her. She's good. So I always remember that. And I always appreciate that. And hey, he was also a pretty good special teams player. Let's not forget that. You know, I'm talking about his personality and the things he did, but let's not forget the fact that he was a dynamo on special teams, made the Pro Bowl as a special teamer. So that was long before the catch, but really a nice little Cinderella story there on David Tyree. Okay, this next guy, also coming from the 2003 draft class, this was the second of the 3 7th round picks of that class, Wayne Lucier, who was a offensive lineman. He was a center guard. And he was, you know, he's a guy that, you know, you're probably saying, well, who, you know, what has he done? He hasn't, he was never a Pro Bowl. He was never, you know, really a guy who, you know, I don't think he stuck around long. I think he played in 2003, 2004. But He is the answer to a trivia question and a very well-known Giants trivia question. Plus, he was a pretty good, you know, a good guy. Obviously, they replaced him in 2004 when they signed Sean O'Hara from then the Cleveland Browns. Sean O'Hara came over in free agency that year to be the Giants' new center. Wayne Lucier is the answer to the trivia question. Who was the center for Eli Manning's first NFL game? Now, the way that came about, for those who don't remember, was in 2004, Eli Manning was given the, I think his first start was against Atlanta. And Sean O'Hara, who was the center that year, he was the starting center. Wayne Lucier was the backup. Sean O'Hara had unfortunately come down with a staph infection that required hospitalization. It was a pretty bad infection, as I remember. He was hospitalized for, I want to say, over a week. It might have been a couple weeks, so it was pretty nasty. So O'Hara ended up missing Eli Manning's NFL debut, and Wayne Lucier was actually the starting center, and I think he took the snaps from Eli for the first two games of Eli's career, and then O'Hara got better and came back. But, you know, Wayne Lucier, I just remember, you know, that was like the highlight for him, because I remember him, you know, being so bubbly and excited that he was going to be part of history. Because, you know, look, Eli Manning at the time, he was the franchise quarterback. He was a Manning, you know, it was the start of a new era, an exciting era in Giant football. And, you know, to be a part of that history was a big deal for Wayne Lucier. And, you know, I honestly hate to say this, but I can't remember how good or bad of a player he was. He, you know, if they upgraded him with O'Hara, obviously they felt they could do better. But I always remember Wayne because of the fact he's part of that trivia question. And it's a pretty neat thing. You know, I think he took pride in that. And I know, by the way, Sean O'Hara was kind of irked that he couldn't take that first snap or have that first exchange, I should say, with Eli Manning. But, you know, it's just how it worked out, unfortunately, for him. So, all right, Giant fans, we are going to take a break here. We'll come back. We have a few more that we're going to talk about on the most underrated draft picks of the New York Giants. Stay with us. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your sportsbook expert. Welcome back, Giant fans, to segment 3 of Locked On Giants. Patricia Traina here with you on a throwback Thursday. We're taking another fond trip down memory lane. It's just my fond trip down memory lane because they're my memories, obviously. But we're talking about most underrated Giants draft picks for one reason or another, whether it be for performance, whether it be for, you know, their place in Giant history. Whatever the case may be, these are some of my favorites. And if you have a favorite underrated draft pick that you want to talk about, send me a letter. You know what to do. Send it to LockedOnGiantsPodcast@gmail.com. And I'll take a look at it, and maybe I'll throw it on the Giants Country mailbag, where I can really, you know, publish these letters and share them with everybody. And, speaking of which, just real quick before I forget, tomorrow we're going to have another edition of Fan Appreciation Friday. Now, I have been in touch with the next couple of fans to try and set up some additional tapings. Right now, I'm only able to run them on Fridays, but as we get into free agency and next week also, we're going to start the pro days and stuff. I may have to move the schedule around, so if I do, don't panic. If I've taped a show with you, I will run it someplace. It'll probably be branded Fan Appreciation Friday, but if it runs on a Wednesday or a Thursday or something like that, don't panic. It's, you know, I'm just trying to accommodate the schedule and as things come at us. So that's coming up. And Thursday's on Locked On NFL are a must-listen as Ryan Tracy and Jake Liskow break down teams across the NFL from an analytics and team-building perspective. Get the expert analysis on your favorite teams from Ryan and Jake every Thursday. Subscribe to Locked On NFL wherever you get your podcasts. And again, with free agency and salary cap cuts, you can get all the expert analysis you need from yours truly, because I am going to be all over that for you. So, all right, let's get back to our most underrated draft picks on this Throwback Thursday. This next one took place in 2004. That year, the Giants had 3 seventh round draft picks. So this guy was the second out of the three. Running back Derek Ward. Now, what was it about Derek Ward that, you know, was so underrated? Well, Derek Ward in 2008 went on to team with Brandon Jacobs. And I believe, I want to say they were the sixth duo. Was it the sixth duo or the eighth duo? Very few duos have done this, but they were one of a handful of duos in NFL history to rush for 1,000 yards apiece. Derek Ward that year ran for 1,025 yards on 182 carries, 2 touchdowns. I don't remember what Brandon ran for. I know it was over 1,000, but the Giants that year had the number one rushing attack. And it was just, my gosh, you know, you talk about smash mouth football. That run game was everything you could have ever wanted in a run game. It was just that good. And it was a big reason why the Giants were on their way. They actually clinched the number one playoff seed that year. Unfortunately, we all know what happened with, you know, Plaxico Burress. We know what happened in the playoffs. The Giants should have gone to another Super Bowl that year. Everybody you talk to with that team will say the same thing. But they didn't. And you can't go back and change history, unfortunately. But Derek Ward, a good player for the Giants, never came close to hitting 1,000 yards after that. He rushed for, that was his last year, I should say, with the Giants. He went on to Tampa Bay and then spent a couple of years in Houston. I think he was a free agent, if I'm not mistaken. So he went on to rush for 409, 315, and 154 with Tampa Bay and 2 stints with Houston. But, you know, for the Giants, he wasn't too bad. He also, this was a player who came back from a broken leg. If I remember correctly, he was the guy who broke his leg up in the University of Albany where they used to have training camp. And I think he slipped on the tile or something and he suffered a crack in one of his legs. And, I can't remember if that was the 2006 season. I think that's when it was. But, you know, bottom line is 2007, he rushed for 602 yards. 2008, 1,025 yards. Pretty good player, as I recall. So, okay, just a few more. And quite honestly, these all come from the same draft class. One of my favorite draft class, and that's the class of 2007. And, you know, the three guys that I've identified as being underrated include tight end Kevin Boss, who was a fifth-round pick. Before him, actually, linebacker slash long snapper Zach Diossi, who was chosen in the fourth round. And running back Ahmad Bradshaw, who was the second of 2 seventh-round picks. Now, we all know about Bradshaw and what he brought to the table as a running back. You know, he was just, you know, I'm not going to go too deep on that because I think a lot of you remember him. Diossi was interesting because at the time, you knew he was a long snapper, but for any team to really spend a draft pick on a guy who was a long snapper was kind of a head scratcher. And you'd end up sitting there and saying, what are you doing? Now, for those who don't know, Diossi was actually by trade a linebacker who just happened the long snap, and he did so on the advice of his father, Steve, who, for those who don't remember, Steve DiAsi was a long snapper for the Giants back during the Parcells era. I believe he was on the 1990 team. So Zach took his father's advice, and you know what? He developed into really a solid long snapper. I mean, he was a guy, and you know, a lot of you, I think, will remember him because he's not that far removed from the game. When the ball was snapped on punts, he was usually one of, if not the first guys down the field. He was a guy who was a Pro Bowler. I think he made the Pro Bowler a couple of times in his career. And, you know, all things considering, when you think of long snappers, you say to yourself, gee, they're a dime a dozen. You can pick them up anywhere. You can even convert guys to long snappers. But if you're talking about the most underrated draft pick out of everybody I have on this list, I think you've got to put DiAsi at the top, because the value they got from him all those years was just, you know, who saw that coming? And, you know, you've got to remember, before that, there was Ryan Keel, who wasn't a bad long snapper, but, you know, he was a kind of a stopgap. You know, Trey Junkin, I know I've mentioned him before, when he came out of retirement in the playoffs and had that bad snap against the 49ers. Jay Alford actually did some long snapping. He did some of the long snapping before DiAsi took it over full time. So, you know, just to have that guy there, not have to worry about that position, people will say, oh, big deal. But you know what? It gave the Giants special teams a sense of stability. And through the years, to hear the kickers and the punters who came through that locker room talk about what a rock DiAsi was, really said it all, as far as I'm concerned. And Zach was another guy who, again, I saw come in as a young man just out of college, and he grew into, you know, a responsible husband, a father, a leader on the team. He took up a leadership role in the NFLPA. That part is really rewarding for me, to watch these guys mature and see what they become. You know, some of them become, you know, movers and shakers, and some of them just kind of fade away, you know. So last guy I do want to talk about, I want to mention Kevin Boss, who is also another one of my many favorites. You know, Kevin Boss kind of I don't want to say a tough challenge, because that's probably not the right way to say it, but here's a kid who came in to a franchise that already had Jeremy Shockey on the roster. And you sit there and you say, okay, if you're lucky, you get, you know, maybe a handful of plays out of this kid here and there. When Jeremy Shockey suffered the broken leg in 2007, Kevin Boss, who, you know, was a very, if you didn't see, I mean, it's funny, he was quiet, but you knew he was there because he was just so tall. I think he was like 6'6". So I don't want to say he was a wallflower, because he definitely wasn't, but he was a quiet kid. Although he would talk to you if he knew you. So I would talk to him a lot, and I got to know him. So Kevin Boss, you know, just stepping up and taking on the responsibility when Jeremy Shockey got hurt. And he did a great job. We all saw what he did in the Super Bowls and whatnot. But I remember having a conversation with him just like that. And it was right before he was going to get extended playing time after the shocking injury. And I went up to him and I said, so, you ready to go? You ready to shock the world? And he said to me, yeah, I think so. I said, what do you mean you think so? And he's like, what if I, he was human. So he's like, well, what happens if I do this, that, and the other thing? And I said to him, so, you know, that's why. So I had a pencil in my hand. I said, that's why there are erasers on the ends of pencils. You make a mistake, you come back, and you make people, forget about it. So, you know, just little pep talks like that. And, you know, Kevin just went on to have an amazing career. And I think I've told this story before. In the Super Bowl, the first Super Bowl the Eli Manning, Tom Coughlin era, Super Bowl 42, when all throughout that run, I know some of the players were, I guess they were getting annoyed or, you know, they were hearing the outside chatter about how unstoppable the Patriots were. And I, you know, in looking at them, especially how the Giants held up against them in that week 17 regular season finale, you kind of figured that maybe they had a chance. And, you know, it was just a very interesting scenario because, you know, some guys were like, you know, are we going to be able to do this? Can we knock these, you know, the Patriots off? And I was like, yeah, you can knock the Patriots off. I mean, they're human. They're not, you know, demigods or anything like that. And I always remember after that game, what happened was they brought the media down from the auxiliary press box, which was basically a patch of club seats. And I had wanted to go to the locker room, the Giants locker room, for the post game. Somehow, some way, I don't know how I did this, but I followed the wrong tape, the wrong colored tape, and I ended up in the interview tent area where they brought different guys out to the podium. And I just remember when they started to bring Giant players out to the podiums, the little like booths that they had set up. Some of them were already, you know, half undressed from their uniforms. Some of them were still in their uniforms. Kevin Boss was still in his uniform. And he saw me and he came up to me, gave me a big old bear hug. And he goes, Pat, you were right. We did it. We did it. And I'm like, it was just, you know, I talk about as a member of the media, you're not supposed to root for a team. You're really not supposed to. And look, at the end of the day, we're all people. And I root for people to succeed because if they succeed, that usually leads to good things. And, you know, but if they don't win, obviously my job is to give it to you the way it is and not try to sugarcoat it. But when you see people who, you know, their confidence has grown over the weeks and the months and they realize that, yeah, I could do this. I mean, there's no greater feeling. And, you know, Kevin Boss was always confident, but, you know, just that one moment is something I'll never forget. It just capped a really, really special week covering Super Bowl 42. My favorite Super Bowl by far of all the ones I've covered. And I've covered, I covered 35, I covered 42, and I covered 46, and I was a fan in attendance for 25. So that's a memory that will forever stick with me. And, you know, I mentioned some of these underrated draft picks. There are so many more. I could probably fill up a week's worth of shows with that, but this show's starting to run a little bit long. Anyway, that is my recollection of the most underrated draft picks, my personal picks. Let me know who yours are. Send me an email, lockedongiantspodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget, tomorrow, Fan Appreciation Friday. So looking forward to talking with our next listener, a longtime listener, and also an Inside Football subscriber. So make sure you tune in for that. So until tomorrow, folks, have a great one.